Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Robert Yeager and the Tau Foundation.
Faith here with your welcome toast. I eat cake and drink wine because it's somebody's birthday somewhere.
I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry with us. Coming up later in the show, we have Matt Jennings, who is author of this cookbook, Homegrown, and this is cooking from his New England roots. He loves New England, but this is a guy who takes what's natural to our region and then puts a little spin on it. So this is New England food as you've had it and have never had it. I'm with my treasured food buddies, senior contributors Chris Brosberry, Alex Province, Mark Raymond. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Robin Doyen. Aiken is with us, the senior producer. Let's do hot spots. Has anybody been any place that they think deserves a shout out? Mark, how about
I found
you?
A cool little spot in Old Wethersfield in my own town. I can't believe I haven't been there before. It's called the Main Street Country Store, right on Main Street in Old Wethersfield, right downtown near the Village Pizza and everything else down there. And it's a couple-owned, beautiful little country store. It's got great little penny candies, and they have an amazing cheese shop. Absolutely amazing cheese shop. Anything that you can think of, well, probably not anything, but they have cheeses from all the artisanal producers in Vermont and New Hampshire and around the United States, but also have some great cheeses from Europe. And they have a really cool little cheese club that you can sign up for. It's pretty reasonable, and they give you tasting notes, what goes with, and little crackers and things like that with it. It's such a cute little store.
Is it crowded? Are people in there buying the cheese?
People are in there buying the cheese. I don't think it's ever a super crowded store because Old Wethersfield doesn't get that much traffic. But you're always looking for a place to get really wonderful cheese around the area.
I'm asking because it's hard. I was just going to
say,
it is
hard local
to
store,
find a
sure.
really good cheese shop. Sometimes you have to drive 20 minutes, a half an hour, 40 minutes to get to one, and to have it right in your town, I'm thinking, everybody, go support
You're lucky,
them.
Yeah.
I was so impressed, Faith. I was actually looking for Parmesan for a risotto that I needed to finish, and it was in a pinch, and I didn't want to have to go to one of the big stores. So I called down there, and she's like, well, I have two options for you. And she started explaining the two
right
different
down.
Options, and I was like, here I come.
Great.
They wrap
so
it in
friendly.
Cool paper. Like,
yeah.
Like cheese shops
the
do.
Really cool paper. She gave me an extra piece because she knew I'd be cutting it in half.
Okay. So give us the name again.
So it's the Main Street Country Store.
Okay. Let's see. Who's up next for hot spots? Chris Brosberry.
Oh, my God. Right here in New Haven, Taste of China.
Yeah.
I am in love. With
also in Clinton, yeah,
also
Connecticut.
Also in Clinton, Connecticut, but I was here
same
in New
owners?
Haven. Same owners. And I was here in New Haven last Sunday putzing around, and I was like, oh, I'm hungry, and where am I going to go? Where am I going to go? And I drove right by it, and I'm like, Taste of China. The celery tofu. Oh, my God.
What's that?
It's Chinese celery, which is this frilly-looking celery with dried tofu, and it's heaven. It's subtle. It's delicious.
Oh, I want to try it.
And then
an appetizer?
These are all appetizers that I start with. I usually get like 10 of them. And so that one, the Szechuan noodles, cold noodles, which are spicy but just cool enough. And then they do a cucumber with ginger.
Ooh.
And, oh, my gosh, so you take a little of the noodles and a little of the cucumber, absolute heaven. And then right after that comes green beans that they do with ginger. They're blanched green beans chilled with a ginger vinaigrette over them. And you can just pop them like French fries.
Oh, that
they're so
sounds
good.
Delicious.
Oh, so
Did you
good.
Drink wine or?
Wait, I'm waiting to hear my favorite dish.
One more app: Chengdu dumplings, which are heaven. And then, so I get a bunch of apps. We share, and then Faith ruined this for me because I used to try like different things, and now there's only one entree. So I always get it right at the end, and it's the pine nut chicken. And I don't know, it comes with these puffy
chicken.
Little bread things that you make little tacos with, right?
It is ridiculously delicious.
Yeah.
They do chicken with these, you know, little diced up pieces of chicken. with these toasted pine nuts, and there are maybe a little bit of chili pepper in there.
Spice. Yes.
And then you're right, these sort of half moon puffed up breads.
Like little pillows.
And the idea is you take the little round pillow and you take a spoon of the pine nut chicken and you put it in and then you fold it in half and you eat that little
bread. Oh, so it's malleable.
Yeah.
Yes, soft like chamois cloth. It is
silky,
crazy delicious.
Wow. I don't try any of their other entrees anymore.
Pine nut chicken.
It's not something you would normally order,
right? It's crazy. And I never – it was on the menu since the beginning, and I've been there 100 times before Faith said, have you ever tried the pine nut chicken? I'm like, no.
Faith,
she goes,
how did you
just order it?
I would think I was with I think I was with Elaine Godofsky. She is, you know, a regular there, and I've been there a million times with Jacques and Gloria Pepin, and we get all tons of things, but I can't ever go there or leave there without pine nut chicken.
So we can walk,
and,
right?
Oh, yeah, and not just that, but this is the other thing I do. So I finish eating. I'm stuffed. Then I have to go up to the counter and order an order of the celery tofu, Szechuan noodles, and the cucumber to go. Because I go home and I'm like, oh, I'm not hungry. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, that was so good. And you are psyched to have your leftovers. And then you wake up in the morning and you're like, I want more. And you're psyched to have the extra takeout.
Or midnight snack.
Is that an addiction?
You are that's an addiction. An addiction.
It's killer though.
But
you
isn't
know,
that
it's
great?
It's the best Chinese.
Here's what we're doing on the show. We thought for fun we would open it with hot spots. These places where you go and you have one dish or many dishes. It's the atmosphere you love in the place where you just say, ah, this is fantastic. Alex, do you have one?
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite spots to eat is On 20 in downtown Hartford. You're on the 20th floor, so you feel like you're in the cockpit of an airplane. And the new chef there is Chef Jesse Powers. He is amazing. He is so, so good. So for my birthday, Matthew and I did a dinner reservation. It's fun for lunch as well. And we got to get dressed up. We take an Uber over. We did the tasting menu and opted for the wine pairing as well. They have a great staff who does the wine. And we just ate and ate and ate. And the food is so beautiful. It looks like art. It's delicious tasting. It's regional.
Can you explain for people who've never been to Hartford and don't know what On 20 is? The setting, because it's really quite breathtaking when you're up there.
You know, it has this reputation of seeming like a private club or something for maybe executives, I don't know. But it's on the 20th floor of the Hartford Steam Boiler Building. You go up into the lobby, and then you take another elevator, and it brings you right up to the 20th floor. It feels very private inside. It has, like, carpeting and wall-to-wall windows. So you feel like you're, you know, like in some private restaurant, but you're not. It's open to the public. And people come tableside with a cart of wine. It's very old school, and I love it.
And it's got a beautiful view of the river as well.
You're looking
down over the beautiful Connecticut River and the bridges that are
right
there.
I think you could look over into East Hartford and down.
To me, it's all about the view.
And it feels like peaceful, like the world has order from up there. So as you're eating, because all Hartford traffic looks
small at that point.
And you can see almost all around, right? It goes around.
They have different, they do private events as well. So there's like different rooms that you could go into.
Do you remember what you had for dinner?
Oh, geez, we had a lot of wine.
All right.
Yeah.
A liquid
so,
dinner.
So, it starts off with, I think we did some fish, and then the tasting menu it gets to that point where, they're small, so you're just getting a few bites of different dishes. But, he covered the gamut from fish, to probably like wild boar or something. It's a lot. Very special. So if you're looking for, you want to get dressed up and you want to do something that's elegant. And, honestly, Faith, it was not more expensive than a normal restaurant out.
Right.
So it feels like it should be. But it's, at the end of the day, it's just like a regular restaurant.
Yeah.
And do you see everything in there? Do you have to get dressed up?
They have a bar and a lot of people after work will go there and they're just in work clothes. But I kind of like to get dressed up every once in a while, right? And
sure.
It's, it just feels special. It was my birthday. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had a thing. I have a very dear friend, Emily Cobb, who lives in Amagansett on the east end of Long Island. And I am what would be called the aunt of her dog, Bon Bon. So everywhere when I go to see her, we take Bon Bon. And so we will go to places that accept Bon Bon. This particular place, every time I see her, has become our club, and it's called Pierre's, and it's in Bridgehampton on the South Fork of Long Island. So we go to Pierre's, and Emily gets every time. I mean, we're ridiculous. They practically have it, the onion soup sitting in front of her when she sits down. Uh-huh. So she has the onion soup, and I have the Alsatian tart. And when you're, this is a Frenchman who owns this place, Pierre's. When you have someone French making an Alsatian tart, that thin crust with the cheese that is just finely grated on it and the little tiny, tiny bits of bacon all over it.
Heaven.
And a little bit of sort of onion flavor.
It all melts together with a little crispiness.
It's so stunningly delicious. I cannot stop eating this thing.
I got to go. I haven't had an Alsatian tart in years.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
I still
the dog.
The dog.
So the dog
sits with you.
Honestly, when we get within a half a mile of the restaurant, Bon Bon starts squealing in the back seat of my car. And I would say to Emily, does he need to get out? She said, no, he's just excited. He knows where we're going. So he has baguette with butter throughout the meal. So we each take turns breaking off pieces of bread. We butter them and then quietly slip them down. Then the wait staff brings water for him. They just love dogs.
That's adorable.
That's wonderful.
It's fantastic. Really is. So hot spots. And, you know, I'd like to invite you right now on Facebook. If you've got a hot spot where you went for a particular dish and you think this, you know, this is great. I will return here to try this particular dish. Would you let us know? Because you're going to turn all of us and everybody else onto a special dish. Our address on Facebook is Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. Okay, and we'll chat back and forth about this.
It's such a cool idea. I think of my favorite restaurants, and I always tell my friends, go there, tell them that you're friends with Alex and Matt, and tell them to order what we order, because there's truth to that, right? Like,
yeah,
because there's certain things that, like Forbidden City, I don't know what's on the menu. I just know Eric always makes me these certain things.
Yeah.
In Forbidden City in Middletown, we always go there and say, tell Eric to order what Matt and Alex, you know, get. Because I don't know what's on the menu. I just, you know, he brings us out this stuff. So it's fun to just say, you know, so it'd be fun on Facebook if people tell us where to go and what to order.
Yeah, oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
I'm imagining our listeners going to restaurants saying, hey, Alex and Matt sent us. And
they said they were paying,
person
too.
Saying, do you know Alex and Matt? No.
Put her on his tab.
Just heard him on the radio, and they told me to come here and order what they ordered.
Actually, I mean, don't we feel, when we meet listeners or our digital friends, when we meet you out there, it does feel in both directions like we know each other. Don't you find that? Like
100%.
We have this, we've never actually seen each other, but we have this ongoing relationship. So you just say you're friends of ours.
For sure.
Robin, do you have a hot spot?
Oh, well, recently I went to Heirloom at the study at Yale for the first time. And
oh, that's a great place.
Talk about people. The warm ricotta appetizer.
Oh, yes.
Right, Faith?
With the truffle oil.
Mm-hmm. And that beautiful bread that they bring out. Oh my gosh.
I'm hungry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I went there before a show, and it was an hour well spent, I'll tell you that.
This is the study at Yale, and it's right down on the main drag in New Haven, and it's the restaurant itself is called Heirloom. It's a beautiful space.
Yeah, very
beautiful
happening.
Beautiful hotel. Yeah, it really is.
The bar was filled.
I was going to say, great place for,
great cocktails.
For cocktails. Yeah.
I was just going to say that. You know, I don't drink cocktails out a lot, but whenever I go there, it just, you sit down at the bar for a second, and I'm just about ready to order a glass of wine or something, and you just look around, and you're like, no, this is the place you have to have a cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It just feels like a great place to have a cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
It does.
Have you guys gone to places that will have like a backgammon table or something where you go and can have a cocktail and play like backgammon?
Do you know Wynvian, the resort?
Oh, yeah. Morris, Connecticut.
Morris, Connecticut. Yeah. So around Litchfield.
Love that place.
Wynvian, not only is the chef just staggeringly good, but they have a game room.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone can use the game room before the meal.
Yeah.
So you can go early, have a drink.
Play checkers.
Play.
Like chess.
You can't imagine what's there.
Shuffleboard.
Backgammon.
The indoor shuffleboard.
Air hockey.
Yeah.
Pool.
Checkers.
Pool.
Chess.
Yeah. Beautiful pool table.
Everything.
They did
so
think
fun.
Of everything.
It's the most
they
fun.
Did think of everything.
It's so beautiful.
And no pinatas.
Spring is coming.
Yeah.
And it'll
be talk about a special occasion place, right?
Yes, but I would say that if I lived right next to Wynvian, I would be there, honestly, I would go every single week. And the food ranges from the simple,
yes. mm-hmm.
you know, I would try and have a lunch, and then when I could afford a bit more, I would have dinner there, beautiful wine pairings with the food.
Mm-hmm. And the gardens in the spring and the summer, oh. the gardens are just gorgeous.
Yes, and the spirit of the people, so professional, so warm at the yeah. same time, not in any way snooty.
Yeah.
Rock on, yeah. as the chef says.
Yeah.
Rock on. Okay, so that was fun. Hot spots.
Yeah.
So in our next segment, I can't wait for this, Alex Province has discovered a wine for us. And what happens is that Alex, Mark, and other people will submit wines. We try them. And then we say thumbs up or thumbs down. And usually, if we're talking about it on the air, it's because we've all tried it and said, this is a great wine. We have a great white wine to tell you about. It's a Chenin Blanc, and it is from the Loire Valley in France. It's widely available. It's a little over $15, so it's a very good price point. We'll tell you all about it in our next segment. And don't forget, also coming up, Matt Jennings, author of Homegrown, using his New England roots, doing stuff, and then putting a little twist on all of our New England favorites. So it's a lot of fun. I really like this cookbook. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. We're online now at foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back.
He likes bread and butter. He likes toast and jam. That's what his baby feeds him. He's a loving man.
Well, I like bread and butter. I like toast and jam. That's what baby feeds me. I'm a loving man.
You know what beans go with? Cornbread, baby. Beans and cornbread.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread.
Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight.
Beans.
Cornbread said, now that's all right.
Beans.
Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready. I'll be ready
cornbread
tomorrow night.
Okay, here we go. Faith Middleton here, inviting you, my partners in crime and I, are inviting you to sign up for our free podcast, which is, you know, a copy of the show, essentially, that comes to you with no effort. It just shows up in your inbox, and you can listen to the Food Schmooze anytime you want. If there's something you wanted to remember from a show, some ingredients, some something, you've got a whole archive of them. It's pretty fantastic. It's the way so many people listen right now. So you just go to our site, foodschmooze.org, and you'll see sign up for the podcast. You just do that once. And you're done. I'm with my treasured food buddies, Chris Prosperi, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, wine brokers Alex Province, Alex from Hartford, and Mark Raymond of Wethersfield are our wine guys on the show, senior producer Robin Doyen Aiken. We promised we would have a little wine tasting. I'm excited about this wine. We'll do a little pouring in the glass. Oh, great. Thank you. Okay, so Alex Province found this for us. This is called Saumur. S-A-U-M-U-R. It's a 2015. If you go to our website, we have this all spelled out. We have a picture of the label. Call your wine store, because they can't stock everything. But it is easily available, right? They will bring it
sure.
to you within 24 hours,
yeah.
and then you're not wasting a trip. So the vineyard making this is called Domaine Lavigne. This is like straw in a glass, that yellow straw. What does this taste like in the mouth?
So the first thing I do is I smell it, and I get flowers. It's just floral and springy.
Do I get peaches? Like
you get white yeah. peaches. I don't know. Maybe
yellow peaches.
It's a wine
I sense pink peaches.
It's a peach. It's in there.
It's in there.
Black. I get black peaches.
There's
Go
some
ahead.
Grapefruit and some lemon.
Mm.
And then once you taste it, the first thing you get is beautiful acidity. And that's what makes a good white wine. You want to taste acidity. And you can taste acidity. You know it's acidity when your mouth starts to water.
Mm-hmm.
So you start producing, you know, kind of funny to say, but saliva. And that's the acidity.
And yet, because people will say, well, why do I want something acid in my mouth? And yet, this is why a winemaker is good. There is a roundness, a little voluptuousness to a wine that's well balanced. So there's the acidity that it's great for food, and so, then this roundness for mouthfeel. And
so it's not a bracing acidity. It's really just soft and
soft. Well, that's where a good winemaker comes in. If it's too strong, then that's bad. And if it's not there, it's flabby, and that's not good. But they say the acidity magnifies the fruit. So you actually, just like Chris would do a squeeze of lemon on a piece of fish, it brings out the flavor. Mm-hmm. So in the mouth, it's springy and light and bounces around, as they say, and almost tastes like a Sauvignon Blanc. The grape is Chenin Blanc, which is a neat grape. You know, they do a lot in South Africa. One of my favorite grapes. So someone who likes a Sauvignon Blanc would enjoy this.
Yes. A little more elegant, though, because most Sauvignon Blancs are a little, you know, baseball bat in the head.
Pretty, can be kind of monochromatic.
And a little less on the grapefruit note. You know, when you have a Sauvignon Blanc, there's a distinct flavor of grapefruit there.
Yeah,
there's,
this is like a genteel Sauvignon Blanc.
And as,
much very,
as Faith, you're saying,
softer,
it's like rounder, right? There's a little more roundness. It's less sharp. We were laughing last night because we had it with tacos. And
nice.
So
awesome.
Today we had it with short ribs, which
it was great. And I never even thought about
had
how great.
This white wine.
I never even thought about that. And it was perfect.
Short ribs.
And it was
with
moxie beans.
Moxie beans. That's coming up in our next segment. And it's this fabulous dish with moxie soda to cook the beans in and the short ribs. And we had that meat with this white wine. And I thought, oh, who cares? And then I thought, this is fantastic together.
It really was.
The sweetness that was in the dish was cut. Really, so refreshing.
And that
beautiful.
Just tells you the structure of this wine, right? It can stand up against soda braised beans and short rib
with mustard
sauce.
What kind of tacos did you have? Yes, that's right, mustard sauce. Tacos you had?
Two nights ago, roasting a chicken's fun, but we only normally eat like a few bites. And then I make a stock with the bones, and then the meat went in the refrigerator. And then last night, Matt sauteed some green pepper, some onion, and then throws in the chicken and made kind of little fajitas and put them in corn tacos. And then, you know, so in preparation for the show, I had a bottle and it just worked really well. It's the acidity in French wines, particularly this style, that just works really nicely with food.
So
it's a condiment.
So this Saumur 2015 is around $18 a bottle. And I know people kind of want to stop at $15. So I'm saying that this wine is worth the extra
$3. Go for the extra
$3.
No, I mean, but, you know, you begin to say, hey, come on, I have to have a stopping point or that's not fitting my budget. And but if you can swing the extra $3, this is a very good wine. And this is from the Loire region, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about where in France.
Well, the interesting thing about the Loire is it's such a long river. If you go to Google Maps and you follow it, it goes all the way from the Atlantic,
forever.
You know, where Muscadet comes from, where they do oysters, and then it goes all the way to, like, Switzerland. So it goes all across France. And this is in the middle part of the Loire. And, you know, it goes right underneath Paris. And, you know, I think in the old days, you would know, Chris, you're half French, people vacation a lot in the Loire. Yes. It's like paradise of France.
Warmer weather.
And the gardens. And
beautiful
this
setting.
Is why there is a roundness in this white wine.
Warm
because
summers.
In the Loire region, you know, parts of it, what happens there is that you'll get a lot of, you know, if you try Loire wines, there is almost a sweetness to them. They're so Fruit forward.
Yes.
And so this is a wonderful balance.
Put it this way, there's a palm tree that grows on the property.
See, that's how you know,
that's how, you know how warm it stays.
And you know, do they have an apartment?
Yeah, that we're going
to
stay at. You know, and when people say, wines are expensive, you know, it is $18, but when you think about it, it's less than $5 by the glass. There's four glasses in a bottle. So if you're with a friend, it's not or if you're by yourself. No,
I'm just thinking.
What's the size of the
most
glass?
Most people would say there are six glasses in a bottle. So this is.
Oh, I was going to say two. I just doubled it.
This is a judge-free zone, right?
But it is interesting that it's a family-produced wine. They only have 5 hectares, so it's less than 10 acres of land. they produce a small amount. It's a father, his daughter, and son-in-law that do it. And so all of this stuff, when you have hand-picked grapes and you're making stuff by hand and it comes from a real place, you know, it's hard to do that stuff inexpensively. It's not industrial.
And so, this brings you to that place. That's when I was tasting it. It really does. It brings you to that place. It makes you want warmer weather. Like, as I was drinking it before, I was thinking, I was like, boy, I'm ready for spring. And I'm like, why am I ready for spring? And I'm swashing it around and smelling it. And I'm like, because it has that kind of warm weather feel.
And the association with it. Yeah.
One of the reasons we were excited about this wine that Alex found is because we are on the cusp of spring. I mean, think about this. It is, you know, 4 weeks away, the official start of spring, March 20th. And this is when we start to say, I need the brightness of lemon and orange in my food, if not in my drinks. Mm-hmm. And so here is something that is giving you. And to be able to have a white wine that looks like hay, that yellow hay in the glass, with meat and beans that have been roasting for the longest time is extraordinary.
That's and moxie
crazy.
Soda.
It's crazy to think that. I didn't even think about it when we were eating
you
it.
You can have this with anything you're serving. Maybe
like,
not red sauce, spaghetti and red
it's
sauce.
It's almost trout season.
Yeah.
So imagine a beautiful piece of trout like stuffed
butter
with
and
mint
almonds.
On the inside and nice and fresh and clean and healthy.
Yeah, pork chops. I would have this with pork chops.
You know what else is neat? The bottle is so bright green and the label so white, it even doesn't look
and it's,
like a
it's
fresh...
a bottle embossed with a kind of fleur-de-lis built right into the glass. It's very pretty, a nice wine to bring to somebody's house.
Absolutely.
Because it's a good aperitif wine, too. Not only great with meat, this white wine. This wine, by the way, Saumur, is at our website, foodschmooze.org. So can I tell you all about this recipe? I have this book that I love and turn to all the time, and it's How to Cook French Food in 10 Minutes.
Oh, wow.
And
nice.
every recipe in it, in every possible category is
in
there.
We all need that book.
I need that book.
And so I saw my favorite, and I thought, oh, I need to remember to put this on. Chris, it's a take on your short ribs and beans that we're going to hear about next.
Yeah.
This is a recipe where you get a can of white beans.
Sure.
You just drain them the way you do. If you want to rinse them, go ahead. And then you get a couple pork chops.
Yep.
And you fry them in a cast iron skillet.
Salt and pepper?
Yes, salt and pepper. You know, a little bit of whatever you like to fry them in, a little bit of oil that you
canola,
like.
Olive oil.
Sure. And
bacon
then
fat.
Fry them for a few minutes on the first side. And then you're flipping them over. So the first side is made this little, like, crispy bits
fond,
in the bottom. You call it fond.
Yep.
Little crispy stuff going on down the bottom of the pan. And now you're going to do the second side, and that would be the halfway mark in the cooking. You just dump the beans in.
As is.
Right out of the can.
Okay.
Stir it in there. And let it cook. And the beans start to soak up a little bit of the pork juice and a little bit of the crispy bits.
You scrape that,
you cook it for a few minutes, and the beans are heated up, and then boom, onto the plate. There you go. Pork chops with
and
white beans.
And it's flavored by the
vinegar.
Cooking of
that
the pork
is a
chop.
French country meal.
Yeah, simple.
They do this in the countryside. That's it.
Yeah.
You don't have to be soaking these beans overnight. You don't have to...
Little mustard on the side and I'm in heaven.
You know, we work.
Yeah. That's a brilliant idea.
Little whole grain mustard.
Simple.
Does it get a little splash of vinegar?
You can throw garlic in there, vinegar, anything you want.
Yeah. White beans and vinegar.
But
so
keep
good.
It simple. That's the key.
Yeah.
Right? Don't have to do all this crazy work with all these tons of ingredients. That shows you. I'm always surprised. There's one recipe I always do that's it's a potato salad. Salad with green beans, and it comes from Linda Juca, my partner. And every time I make it, it just blows me away. It's her mother's recipe, and it only has like potatoes, green beans, garlic, mint, and the teeniest bit of salt. And that's it. It has nothing else. Every time I make it, I go, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever eaten. Because sometimes when you start throwing things in and you're like vinegar and this and that and this and that, you lose the authenticity, the nuances of just something as simple as these beans cooked with the pork chops. So like Faith said, the juice from the pork chop is going to come out. The fat from the pork chop is going to come out.
Yeah.
You have the flavor that these little bits got caramelized on the bottom of the pan. And now you're scraping that up and the beans release this little bit of liquid that helped loosen that. And it all becomes this one simple, amazing dish that you don't need to keep putting stuff in it. Sometimes it's just perfect as is.
Imagine doing
this
over.
It's a one-pan dish.
Yeah.
Like a cast iron on a fire.
Yeah.
Go camping or car camping.
Totally.
Sit out.
With nothing else, right?
Yeah.
Simplicity.
Yeah. We don't even need to go camping. Go
no.
camping
just
in
build
your
a fire
own kitchen.
In the house.
Oh, that's it.
I mean, it's very, very simple to do.
And
so,
yummy, right? And so
yeah,
delicious. Probably
yeah.
one of the best meals you've had, in, right?
Well,
in...
I do it, you know, I do it kind of regularly.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you know, yeah. people like pork or they don't, and I happen to
adore it.
We got to
get the name
it.
Of the book.
Yeah.
Because I think it's How to Cook French Food in 10 Minutes.
It's on Amazon. I already ordered it because I have I have the one-step ordering where you only have to hit the button once and
okay,
it's already
done. Okay, so what
done.
Do you got? What?
It's $7.99 Amazon Prime. I'll have it in the morning. It is called French Cooking in 10 Minutes.
Yeah.
And if you could help me with the pronunciation of the name, I'd be most appreciative.
Oh, listen.
I'm going to get that.
And I'm half French, so Dad's listening.
I can.
Yeah.
Edouard de Pommien.
Beautiful.
Can you believe?
Edouard.
How did I do?
I think you did great. I'm just not good with the pronunciation. I can hear it, but I can't.
You can't. Are you crazy? Of course you are. All right, listen, we've got to go because in our next segment, I've been waiting for this, as you have too. Matt Jennings is our guest. He's done a book called Homegrown. He is a New England guy. He has a restaurant in Boston. He loves to take the New England classics and put a spin on them, use his New England family recipes. He understands that New England is made up of many cultures. He is the most wonderful and smart cook, and we made some of his stuff. We're going to tell you all about it. You're going to love this. We love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers. You can get a podcast of our show delivered to your inbox every week at foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back.
I took a trip to Boston. I was feeling in the mood for a plate of that wonderful, famous food. When I got there, I had a big shock. Just about as big as a whole city block. They have no beans in Boston, plenty of fish. Chinese food, if that's your dish. Steaks and chops are a beautiful fare. I couldn't find any Boston beans there.
I've already been to Paris, already been to Rome. And what did I do but miss my home?
Oh, New England.
I have been out west to California. But I miss the land where I was born. I can't help it.
This is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County, the East End of Long Island, the Hamptons included, of course. The senior producer is Robin Doyon Aiken. And to hear this show on WNPR, it airs Thursdays at 3 and 9 p.m. and then Saturdays at noon, as almost everybody knows. The name of this cookbook is Homegrown. We've been waiting for this on the show. Our guide, the author, is Matt Jennings. He's really pretty much of an awesome guy. We've got him lined up on the phone. Because here's what he said to open this book. When I say that I cook New England food, this is what I mean. A cuisine rooted in early American history, altered by immigrants from all corners of the globe, and further informed by my own travels around the world. So when I cook, the food I make celebrates this region, its ingredients, geography, and climate, its history and traditions. I hope the book Homegrown gives you a glimpse and a taste of the place I'm so proud to call home. That's a great introduction, Matt. Welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Hey, thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Oh, great to have you. Really great to have you. Also want to thank you for giving us permission to put three of your recipes that we love up on our food site, foodschmooze.org. We're going to get to those in a second. I'm going to start with something from your book that is not on our website. This is called Evie's Pub Cheese. Oh, Matt. Explain how this came to be, and then we'll talk about what you do to make this. Go ahead.
We were one of the first people to pronounce my grandmother's name correctly. It was Evie, not Evie, so she'd be very happy to hear that. I grew up with this recipe. Evie was my grandmother, and she was an incredible cook, really more of a baker than anything, but she had a few savory recipes up her sleeve, and this was one, and it was a super simple kind of afternoon pre-football delicacy that she'd make for my grandfather.
This is so fun. Honestly, I think this recipe in particular, I would run and get the book because of this recipe. Listen to this. This is large amounts of Colby cheese and then Hellman's mayonnaise then sour cream, cream cheese, white onion that's grated on a box grater, red bell pepper that's finely minced up, and then minced up cornichon pickles.
Yum.
And a little bit of that pickle juice, which I think is a secret weapon, a scallion that's finely chopped, onion powder, a little bit of Worcestershire sauce, some sweet Spanish paprika, Dijon mustard, ground turmeric, celery seed that you crush, a garlic clove very finely minced, and about 10 dashes of hot sauce, and then some salt and pepper. And honestly,
get me the chips.
Describe this. Is this unbelievable?
It's like this, cocktail hour.
This goes, into the oven, everything, right?
Oh, no, this is a no-cook situation. It's a dip, essentially, but it's, you know, it's basically the northern version of pimento cheese, you know, so this
nice.
Is...
Yeah. Wow! I love it!
We'll call it New England pimento cheese.
Yeah, but what about the... but, Matt, what about the Colby? Because I kept looking at the... I thought, how is she getting that Colby to melt that way?
It's just really finely grated. So basically, this was in England, in pubs, this was an item that would sit out kind of on the butcher block counter that the gentlemen, when they come in after work and have their pint, would kind of gather around, dunk pieces of bread or stale crackers in this kind of pub cheese, and it was just became kind of a social event. Well, my grandfather is from Yorkshire, England, and so when he came over here as a kid, this was something his father ate, my great-grandfather. So this recipe kind of came into our family as one of the real traditional English kind of staples of pub culture. And so my grandmother just took it and tweaked it and made it her own and something that we grew up with. So no cook, it's just great. And combine all these elements together, stir it really well, and you're off.
Oh, I love it.
Now, we love our Southerners, but you've got nothing on us when you see this recipe.
I'd put it on slabs of white bread.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'd put it on my shoes and eat it. It's really fabulous. Okay, let's go to one of the recipes we do have on the site. This is your milk-braised chicken legs. We love milk-braised pork, and I've been wondering if you could do a milk-braised turkey, how it would work with chicken, and here comes your recipe with this spiced rice. So tell us how you came upon this.
Well, this was kind of another one of those cold weather New England discoveries that just happened to work. You know, we always love sourcing products for the restaurant and for my home from kind of those places that you can trust and where you know the producer. And so we're always seeking out high-quality ingredients, whether it's dairy or fish or meat or vegetables. And I think this was one of those things that we came up with kind of after a market stop one day, a farmer's market stop, picking up some fresh milk and some fresh poultry and some other things and just kind of put this together. There was a wonderful, or continues to be a wonderful, indoor farmer's market in the wintertime in Providence, Rhode Island, where I used to live.
And so
we brought a bunch of these things home and got cooking. But milk has a really interesting ability to break down protein structure in meat because of that lactic acid. So it tenderizes while it's cooking. So it's one of the beauties of this recipe is that you come out with, it may not be this kind of stunningly, centerfold quality visual because you do have some, you know, coagulation of the curds and some separation of the milk as it cooks. You have this incredibly rich, decadent, delicious,
very
tender chicken. Yeah.
So everybody, I mean, you can see this at our site, foodschmooze.org. Thanks to Matt and the publisher. But imagine this. So you've got chicken thighs with the bone in because they're going to be more flavorful, right, Matt, this way with the bone
in. Exactly.
And then a little salt and pepper and a little canola oil and some unsalted butter and pearl onions and a few celery stalks and some orange zest and star anise and a cinnamon stick. You can thicken this with a little all-purpose flour, or if you're somebody who's got gluten issues and you want to use cornstarch, you could do that too, right, Matt?
Sure.
Whole milk, a bay leaf. This all comes together as Matt says, it breaks down the protein in the chicken, and all that juice in the milk also creates an amazing sauce. Mm. So you've got your sauce still good.
Gravy.
And then you've got a spiced rice that you serve with this, which is garlic and coriander seeds and cumin seeds, brown rice, and a little bit of butter and scallion all diced up. And you start putting the chicken on top of that rice with the gravy. How about that? I lived in Providence too, Matt, and loved Rhode Island, loved Providence. I know the farmer's market stuff that you're talking about, so this is, I'm really into what you're into. So Chris Prosperi, yes, it is. So Chris Prosperi, our resident chef here on the show, we asked Chris, we said, Chris, would you make these short ribs that are in the book and on our website, foodschmooze.org? These are the braised short ribs with moxie beans.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about moxie soda.
Yeah.
To flavor this. So, Chris, tell us how this was. Tell us how this went
for
you.
The short ribs are good. It's all about the beans, though. And you know what? I didn't think I was all in because of the soda. But, boy, when we ate it, I noticed, and this rarely happens, I looked around the table, and all the plates were clean.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, they really, the beans were gone.
It was really good.
It was almost addictive, right? Because you kept like, oh, I'll just take one more bite. It's that thick slab bacon that's crisped on top that got all mixed
with
in there.
With the moxie soda.
With the moxie soda.
Wait, did this happen to you when we were eating this dish of Matt's? I tasted the beans and I said, wow, that is a you know, quite on the sweet side. I'm going to eat all of my short rib. And I ate it. And then I put my fork down, and then I was staring, looking at the beans, and I picked my fork back up, and I had a few more mouthfuls of beans. Then I put my fork down, and then we were talking, and then I picked it back up. Like, I just couldn't stop
the
eating
mustard
them.
Gets into the beans because it's a mustard sauce. Like you braise it, and then you finish the sauce with some whole grain mustard, and oh my God.
Yeah. Okay, let me tell you. So the beans, you've got kidney beans, and they're dried, by the way. Mm-hmm. Little canola oil and salt. The moxie soda, and if you don't have that, you could use Dr. Pepper, people. Apple cider vinegar and bacon slices. Then you do your short ribs with the usual suspects, garlic and chopped tomatoes and dry red wine and beef stock and whole grain mustard. And it all gets cooked and it's served together. And it is...
the beans.
And was it hard for you to do?
No, Chris? No. You soak the beans and you cook them. And then when they're pretty much all the way cooked, you know, maybe not quite, you take them, you strain them, and then you put them in a heavy bottom Dutch oven and you pour over the soda, which again, I was like,
bubbles up.
Bubbles up, yep. And then you mix in some tomato paste and then some apple cider vinegar. And remember, moxie has a little bitterness, right?
Yep.
So it has the bitterness, it has the sweetness, and then you put a little apple cider vinegar, which gives it a little sourness, and then it gets this thick sliced bacon. So you mix all that up,
smoky.
You put it in the thing, and then the bacon you cut into pieces and lay it on top. And let me tell you, the smell coming out of the oven. Everybody started coming over like, what are you making? I'm like, you got work to do, people. Get back to work. And I'm like, what is that? What is that? I'm like, is that the thing the moxie went in? I'm like, yeah, that's what my kitchen staff, they ate half of it before I could
like
even
baked
pack
bean.
It. It's like
it
a it's like a crazy new – or Boston baked bean, right?
It's like beans, right. A hole in the ground beans, except with like what in the heck went in that hole?
How did you get to moxie? Because let me tell you, that's what did it.
All of my recipes start out with the intent of being a studying contrast. So – and this recipe is exemplified by, you know, sweet, salty, sour, bitter. You know, we've got a little bit of that acid in there. We've got the kind of fattiness of the beef and like everything comes together to play really nicely together. It's like a bunch of ingredients in a sandbox. You know, they got to get along.
I know. I love that you do that. Yeah. This is what we mean when we say he's spinning our New England tradition, just as people did back then.
Yeah.
Matt, one of the things you say in this recipe that I really love, and again, it's in your book, which is called Homegrown, Matt Jennings, and also on our website, foodschmooze.org, you say in a description that short ribs, and I agree, they improve when they've sat around for a little amount of time. So if you make the short ribs a day ahead, right?
Yeah, I like to make them the day ahead, and this recipe is really best the next day, reheated, to be perfectly honest, because it sits in its own juices and everything kind of absorbs, and you get just the flavor is really much more nuanced day two.
Yeah, the beans too, right? The beans were great last night. They were even better today.
So let us tell you something that happened. One of our partners in crime here, Mark Raymond, was so inspired by what you did that he used what he had at hand, and something kind of special happened. Mark, what would you do?
Well, I just replaced the Moxie with root beer. And I did it because my son loves root beer. And I knew if I told him that I was actually braising short ribs in root beer, he might actually eat them. For a 13-year-old, you know, you always got to try and tantalize them in some way to eat that whole meal, you know, because it's always a struggle.
Daniel, there's a Klondike bar in here.
And I'll tell you what, Matt, it worked. It worked really well. It was really cool. Love the recipe.
Matt, do you think that no matter what dark soda you put in, if you put in Moxie or Dr. Pepper or Mark's Root Beer, maybe even a cola, would they all end up tasting the same, or are they going to have different flavors?
Well, they're all going to be a little bit different. You know, I mean, Moxie has this gentian aspect to it, this gentian root flavor, which is really makes it really unique.
Hmm.
It's almost like an herbaceous quality to it, which the others don't necessarily have. But, you know, I mean, if you're a root beer guy, you know, try root beer. One of the things I keep telling everybody about this book is that I would prefer that they use it as a jumping off place to be inspired to cook, right? So they should be using these recipes as a base guideline and look at them and say, oh, this is a really cool idea. I love how he does this. What if I did this at home, or I don't have access to this ingredient? Maybe I can substitute this. I think, you know, that's what it's more about for me. I prefer that people be cooking more so than not. So using the book as inspiration is great.
So I love the book. Now I'm madly in love with you, because only someone with real vision and generosity would say, you don't have to follow my recipe exactly. So thank you, Matt. Hey, you know what I forgot to say? That Matt has a restaurant. He had a restaurant in Providence, Farmstead. And then he went back home to Boston, let's say, and he opened a restaurant called Townsman, which is what we would call a New England brasserie. You know, and you can see what we mean by that, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking, imagine trying to make those short ribs or the beans using Aperol.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, what would happen?
I don't know. Matt, what would happen?
Well, I don't know. That would be those would be some potent beans, though. That's for sure.
Alex is making them this weekend if you want to come over.
It might be a little orange, but
so helpful.
Yeah.
All those roots and herbs. Okay, besides the short ribs on the site, we asked for one more recipe because this is a favorite of mine and Robin's, chocolate beet cake. This one has a chocolate orange glaze, and we put this recipe up on the site, foodschmooze.org, and of course it's right here in Matt's book, Homegrown. You know, there's something that happens with beet and chocolate. It's a natural pairing. It's surprising. You can't taste the beets, and yet the moisture from them is there, and the health from them is there, and it's just gorgeous.
Is it like
with
an earthiness or something?
Well, I think what's nice about the beet is that it adds a little bit of moisture. It adds a little bit of residual sweetness that is not like a refined sugar sweetness necessarily, but more of that kind of subtle vegetal sweetness. Just kind of one of those things where you can look to ingredients that may be unusual and begin to incorporate those into your recipes, even into, in this case, sweets.
We're talking about butter and olive oil in the cake, flour and sugar, but not too much sugar, and cocoa powder and baking soda and baking powder, usual suspects, and then buttermilk and eggs and vanilla extract. Then you make this glaze. And, you know, these beets in here are, you can use red or golden, and you kind of poach them, and then you put them in the food processor, and they become a puree, and it just disappears in the cake. But the cake is unbelievably moist and yet has a denseness. You know, his idea of vegetal sweetness is just a beautiful description. I love that, Matt.
It works really well. It works really nicely. What is a huge part of cooking for me is to encourage people to not be afraid. I think that, you know, we're at our best in the kitchen when we're willing to take some chances and you know, kind of look around at our plethora of ingredients that surround us. I mean, the amount of things that are in the marketplace is unprecedented, right? We have access to the most incredible foodstuffs. And so to kind of look at those and not be afraid, and may be interesting, it might be a little scary, but the results are totally delicious.
All I can say is amen.
Yeah, yeah. Me too.
That
me too.
So, yeah.
Hey, don't you think we have to go to Boston and do a
road
food
trip.
Cruise right at Townsend?
I think we should.
At his restaurant.
Road
I
absolutely.
Think so.
I want that. Road trip.
Matt, you're awesome. Thank you so much for being on the Food Schmooze with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Okay, see you,
Matt.
See you
Take
soon.
Take care, Matt.
We're on WNPR Thursdays at 3 and 9. And Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for my 60-second food schmoozers. You know our rule, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton. Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast on your schedule. And when you need a little more party in your life, we're here online at foodschmooze.org. And we hope you'll talk with us on Facebook. We're at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze.